Minutes of the 18th of February being circulated, published on the 24th. Are we all happy for me to sign them? That's that one. Oh, that one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any apologies?
None received, Chairman. I think we've got a full house tonight.
Well, congratulations, everybody. So, item three on the agenda, officers' reports. 3A, internal audit. Presentation.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll have to stand up because I'll have to press some buttons on the machine. I don't like standing up at the front at all.
Are we all turning around so we can watch you?
If you can see the screen, it would probably be useful. Hopefully, it isn't a death by PowerPoint, there aren't too many slides. So. We put this on the agenda because internal audit has standards that we have to follow. Those are being updated and new standards are coming into force from the 1st of April 2025 that we will have to follow. So this is just a brief presentation for the committee to give you an overview of what those standards are and how they affect it, and more particularly focusing in how we internal audit interacts with the audit committee. So, just a brief position statement of where we're at. We have standards that we follow at the moment, which are set out in the public sector internal audit standards and the local government application notes. So, we have two documents that we follow.
Sit over there.
In terms of those two documents, the first one is based on the Institute of Internal Audit's standards that they had. But with a lot of public sector interpretation, so it's a 30-40 page document setting out lots of context for the public sector trying to interpret the Institute of Internal Audit standards, which are a global set of standards, primarily private sector focused, so they needed a lot of interpretation. The local government application note is specifically for local government and how we work in local government, so it puts a lot more context in there. We are moving to new standards, which are going to be called the Global Internal Audit Standards. In their wisdom now, we are adopting the IIA's, the Institute of Internal Audit, as global standards as they stand with very little interpretation. There's a lot more work gone into the global standards. There's a lot more context for public sector, both in the UK and wider out there. So they are being adopted pretty fully, but those standards have gone from a 30-page document to about 120-page document, so they are quite thick. For the UK public sector, they're going to take effect from the 1st of April, as I said. For the rest of the world and the private sector, they will have already taken effect from the 1st of January this year. Alongside those, though, we do have two short documents. So whilst I've said we're adopting those standards pretty much unchanged from the IAA, there is an application note for the UK public sector, and there is a code of practice for internal audit in local government on governance. So even though there is that big document, we're still saying that for the public sector we need some interpretation, but very little this time. And for local government, particularly around the governance of internal audit, we're putting some elements in there. All of those sort of three documents are going to be referred to as the Global Internal Audit Standards for the UK public sector, and that's what I will have to refer to moving forward as being compliant. So if you remember, we do annual reviews and we've had those external reviews against the standards. It's just updating that document. So rather than being in compliance with the public sector internal audit standards, will have to be compliant with this GIAS, the Global Internal Audit Standards for the UK public sector. The document itself is split up across five domains, really. As I say, the first one is just a brief statement about what internal audit is about. There's a whole domain about ethics and professionalism for the profession of internal audit. Domain three is governing the internal audit function, and that's where our interaction with management, with where we're set within the organisation, and also our interaction with the audit committee is really set out. And I'll delve into that a little bit more in the couple of slides. The final two domains about how the internal audit section is managed by myself, so things I have to do as a manager. And the last one is about how we actually deliver audits, so that's what those standards are for. A lot of it doesn't really change from what we had before. So that application note for the UK public sector, it really is how we comply with the global standards from a UK public sector context. And I've just done this slide as well, which really sets out where that is drawing on additional guidance. So ethics and standards in public life. So the global standards don't refer to the Nolan principles, which were a big thing for ethics in the UK public sector. So that application note talks about those things. It talks about handling information. Obviously, we've got things like the Freedom of Information Act, which doesn't apply for the rest of the world, although some people do have similar acts. So it's bringing those things in and bringing in a stance on value for money, which again isn't part of a commercial, corporate, worldwide internal audit function. And then there's some other areas around what we have to do in terms of our resources and things like that. So the fact that we aren't free to go to audit committee and say, actually, I think I need some extra staff, can I have it? We are bound by the council's recruitment, our structure, our pay and terms and conditions. The standards are written so that the chief auditor can go to audit committee and say, I'd like a pay rise, I think I'm worth more money for the work that I do, can I have it? Unfortunately, in the public sector, we can't do that. But that's only the same as the current standards. In terms of this code of practice on governance, it is really what it's about. It's about applying that domain three about the governance of internal audit and setting out what we should have in a local government context. And it links to lots of existing guidance that's out there. So we've got a position statement on audit committees that we should be complying with that gives best practice for audit committees. There's a SIPFA role of the head of internal audit document, which is brought into that as well. And there's a SIPFA, things like the SIPFA financial management code, so it's how we fit into that. So really, I think the underlying message of lots of things in this presentation is we've got new standards, they say a few different things, but really we're already complying with a lot of it, and there isn't that much change for things that you will see. That domain three, there's a little table here setting out the key standards and principles within domain three. And as you can see in there, there's lots of things that you will recognise as the audit committee. So we've got 6.2, we have to have an internal audit charter. This committee approves the charter, and I will have to update that and bring it back to you about how we link into management, where we're placed within the organisation independently. So we have got that. One area in there is chief audit executive qualifications. This is something that's different in the public sector than the global standards, because the Institute of Internal Auditors are setting their standards for their professional members. They say all chief audit executives or chief internal auditors should be a qualified member of their institute. In the UK public sector, we accept that there are wider qualifications, thankfully for me, because I am not an IIA member. I'm qualified through SIPFA. So in the UK public sector, in local government, we accept that SIPFA members, other UK accountancy qualifications are recognised. So there's bits of guidance in there as well. Things like the quality in the EQA, the external quality assessment, or things that are in the existing standards as well. So it just sets it out how those things are. And where it talked about board, generally for most purposes, we think of the audit committee as our board. So anything that's reporting to the board in the standards comes to this committee. As I say, that's not changed. The one bit that is new is that we have to have an internal audit mandate. This is a new requirement in the standards, and it's really saying in the global standards that we have to come to the audit committee or to the board of directors of the company and have a mandate for having internal audit in the organisation and how we are run. There's a big difference for the UK public sector and for local government, because actually legislation says we have to have an internal audit section, so we don't need that mandate from the audit committee. the Section 151 of the Local Government Finance Act and the Accounts and Audit Regulations say we have to have it. So it's really just reaffirming those things. I think one other new thing in the standards is we have to have an internal audit strategy, which I've been around long enough. Under the CIPFA code, before we went to the public sector standards, we had to have an internal audit strategy. That was dropped, although parts of it were in the charter and other things. It's now come back that they're saying, alongside the charter, we need some standard, an internal audit strategy. So things go round in circles, but there will be a few new things, like I say, that audit strategy will be coming to committee. But the rest of it, probably that middle block of bullet points there, is showing how we will interact with the audit committee, and lots of that will be familiar. So, as I say, other than that internal audit strategy, we already bring the charter to you to approve, and we update that. We already bring the audit plan to you for approval. You get updates on the work of internal audit. You get the annual effectiveness report, and the external quality assessment comes here. So actually, again, that message, most of what you will see will be the same, with just a few tweaks and a few bits of extra documentation or paragraphs in existing documents. But that broadly is what that CIPFA Code of Governance set out. I've just dropped this in because this is something that we're bringing in through, or trying to promote more through the risk management process that we're bringing in, again from the 1st of April, that we are going to update members of this committee on and give you training later in the year. But it's this concept of three lines of they used to say three lines of defence, but three lines within the organisation. So we've got first line services, or the service delivery elements. We've got assurance functions like health and safety, risk management, performance management, who monitor those corporate policies and say how well we're doing. And then we've got internal audit at the side, who look at those first two lines and tell the board and tell the audit committee how well we're doing. So we expect cabinet and leadership team to get assurance from the first line managers, so your heads of service, your service managers, to say we're doing everything well. We expect the assurance functions to feed up to the leadership team and cabinet where necessary, to say all of our key assurances are working well. And then you've got the third line, which is internal audit, telling you whether the first two lines are doing their job as well, independently of what they're doing. So it's just a useful little diagram about how internal audit fits in there, and shows some of that reporting lines and work that we've got. And then towards the side, we've got people like external audit and external regulators. Some of those could be a third line, like internal audit, giving you that assurance. Some have other duties as well. That's all I was really going to cover on this presentation, just to give you that overview. I'm sure Jim will send the slides out. He's got a copy ready to go out to you after this. But I'm quite happy to take any questions. But I say that key message is, whilst I've got a lot to read through and a lot in the standards of 120 odd pages to interpret, key messages, you shouldn't see a huge amount of difference. Everything that you have been getting, you will still be getting, and you will have just a couple of extra documents to approve. Quite how I'm going to do a long-term audit strategy when the organisation may not exist in 2-3 years' time, through the reorganisation, I'm not sure, but certainly I'll be doing perhaps a 2-year audit strategy for you to look at. So is there any questions or anything on that? If I may, through you to...
It's about the strategy, actually. Given that there is a charter and a plan,
yeah,
what are they setting out that's different to those two in the strategy?
So the audit plan is our sort of day-to-day work, so it will be for no more than a year just setting out the actual audit work that we'll be doing. The charter sets out broadly our framework for being. It tells the type of reports will come to committee, how we interact with management, with audit committee, some of the powers that we have, such as the power to ask for explanations, to see documents. So it just clarifies some of that. The audit strategy is almost, where do we want to get to? So it's almost like that. We are, what position are we in now? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? Where would we like internal audit to be in 3 years' time? Because strategies are generally that 3 to 5 year timeframe? Where do we want to be, and what actions do we need to do to get there? Like I say, you've already had some of that information over previous years. Normally I put it in the annual reports. We do our effectiveness review. If we've had the external review, we'll put that into the annual report, and there'll be an action plan at the end of that annual report. Actually, this strategy may well pick up that action plan. So it will be a bit of a, say it is a bit of an extra document for us, but other organisations may not have done that. And I think because some of these standards are global, UK, New Zealand, Australia, America are far advanced in what we do for internal audit for lots of other countries out there where it's a newer function and not as well embedded. These will be things that they don't have, they won't have thought about, so that's why it's in there. I think, if I may chair, I think Judith wants to
I think the other side of that as well, again, Stephen's covered in tonight's report that goes with the audit plan, because that talks about kind of the underlying approach we want to take. So we're talking about majoring it around compliance and things like that. There's the things that we could also include in our strategy about kind of what we're going to use an audit to achieve in a slightly different way. So I think there'll be two dimensions of that. But most of it, you're right, is already covered in things that we do. It's just how I think we pull that together.
Yes, yes.
And maybe see, there might be a few things that we think, oh, actually that's something else we can add in that just kind of brings it all together.
I think for me, in an ideal world, I probably would have liked to have brought the audit strategy to you tonight along with the audit plan, because that's almost our forward looking where we're going.
Mm.
My plan is to bring it in June with the updated charter, which is what we've normally done. We will have done our effectiveness review in the previous year, updated all of our documents, updated our action plan, so it still works bringing it in June at the back of that. But I suppose in an ideal world we'd have our strategy and our audit plan going at the same time, because that's our forward looking, and then the annual report is how well we've done against the plan, how well we've done against delivering the strategy, and where we want to go.
Yeah. Has this meant an increase in the workforce, having had to take new employees on to cope with the extra work?
It hasn't, and I say probably most of the extra work's fallen to me, because it's understanding the new standards, it's understanding where we need to tweak the documents. But actually, fundamentally, I think, as I said, because we were compliant with the old standards and this is broadly the same, there's a lot more guidance, there's some new areas, but a lot of it we were already in a good position that we're broadly compliant with most of these things. As I say, off the top of my head, the only things we haven't got at the moment is we haven't got an audit strategy. Although we haven't got the mandate set out, actually part of my current charter is a few paragraphs that say actually the reason for internal audit in local government is the Finance Act and the Accounts and Audit Regs. So all I've got to do is change the title on those paragraphs on that heading to say this is the mandate for internal audit, rather than I forget what it is now. So it's tweaking little words for us. But if you're an organisation in another country, it might be an awful lot of work to get there.
So you haven't taken on any?
We haven't taken on, no, we haven't got there. Part of the standards is assessing the resources that we need to deliver the work. Actually, complying with the standards isn't necessarily about delivering the work.
Mm-hmm.
So I doubt I'd get anybody just for new standards. And within the audit plan on tonight's agenda, you'll see that resource calculation that we've got, and an opinion that I've put that I think we've got enough work to give me enough information to give you the annual opinion at the end of the year, albeit as part of these standards that I forgot to mention in there. Previously in my annual report, I've had to give you an annual opinion on the effectiveness of the governance, the risk management and the controls of the council. According to the new standards, I've got to give you an annual conclusion rather than an annual opinion. So that's some of the changes that are coming in. I'm sure I will slip into to keep referring to an annual opinion, because it's something we've had for many, many years. Quite why they made that change from an opinion to a conclusion.
Do we have to approve your conclusion?
You do when you get the annual report. You almost have to accept the report and note the report.
Well, I'm sure we'll have great fun with that.
Yeah. whether there are some semantics around an opinion and a conclusion.
Yeah.
For me, it's broadly the same thing that we'll be taking. Yeah. Are there any other questions on that before we... So what you will start seeing is the annual plan report will refer to doing enough work to satisfy the global internal audit standards rather than the public sector internal audit standards. The annual report, when I bring that, will refer to these, the internal effectiveness review and the assessment of compliance. When that comes this year, it's probably still against the old standards because we'll be looking back to last year, but the next one you get will be looking against these new standards because it's how we've complied in 25-26 with the new standards. So it is going to be a bit of a confusing year where we're still, up until the annual report in June, we're still going to be looking back to those old standards a little bit.
Could I just ask briefly, where is your external audit coming in?
So it doesn't come into this at all because these are internal audit standards.
Mm-hmm.
Where it does come in is probably more in that code of governance, because there's elements in there about the actual application note for the public sector, because there's more emphasis on us in the UK public sector working with other regulators and external auditors to try and compare our work. But Judith and I can both remember when we used to have the managed audit, we used to work very closely with external audit. They used to ask us to do certain things and try and sort of direct our plan. There were some benefits to that with the work that we did to satisfy them for their accounts, but they never really did anything to help us. They are now of the stance that they don't direct our work, they don't really look at a lot of our work. They will ask for my audit reports or certain ones of them when they're doing their external audit, but most of the time they're doing that after the year end just to take a view on where we're at. As an example, this year, as always, I pulled my plan together before it comes to committee. I email the external auditor saying, as part of this spirit of joined up working, trying to avoid overlap and making sure you're happy, here's my plan, do you have any comments? And probably for the last 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer, I haven't even had an acknowledgement or a response back, whereas before they might have said, yes, that looks okay, or yeah, we're comfortable, you're doing enough work to satisfy us that you've got an effective internal audit. Now we don't even get a response.
Well, we still be paying them a fee, because we paid the external audit a fee. If you remember, I can remember them coming asking for more money, and I was wondering what they wanted it for.
If I may, Jack, I think Judith wants to answer that one.
What have they done to merit it? There is an issue with kind of external audit fees at the moment, and because we've not had audited accounts, technically the external auditors are not being paid. So I think there's going to be some pressure for the 24-25 accounts for the external auditors to be able to audit them so that they will get paid. And that's in line with how they're engaged. So,
does that mean, Judith, that we've not paid the auditors for the last 3 years?
I would really need the 151 officer to comment fully on that. I mean, it may be that we've had to pay them something because there will have been grant claims. So I'm not suggesting that we've not paid them anything at all. I say because there have been grant claims, they would have been audited. But in terms of the audit, the accounts where the bulk of the fee would come from, because we've not had those audited, I don't believe that they've been paid for that element of the work.
I wonder if you paid them for how much did it get?
No wonder they were a bit sniffy.
But I think also to answer the other part of the council often question, the external just have their own regulations that they have to follow.
Right.
So there's a certain standard that they will have to deliver their external audit to. And so we've seen the change. They don't expect as much of it. The more things they have to do to themselves now rather than we've got one of those who to keep the fees down. If we agree to do certain things, reduce their work, check their fees down, but now they're mandated, they have to do that.
Thanks for that, Judith. Thanks, Steve, for that.
Well, thank you very much for that, very interesting. Glad to see that we've done most of the work already.
It's certainly been an interesting project. 6-12 months since they were issued for me to try and understand them, and I say if anybody does want to read the 120 pages, I'll kind of circulate a couple.
Oh, we're used to it, you know. You go to any committee meetings these days, if it's under 75 pages, somebody's not been doing it properly. Anything else under this item then? Report 3B. Is it just turning the pages over? Any comments?
There was no room report for Stephen's items, so we're now on item 3B.
Oh, sorry, we've jumped to stage.
Yeah, we've done 3A.
3A was the presentation.
Yeah, my apologies. I was thinking it was, I was trying to work out where we'd got to. There. Right, so any other comments on 3A? Well, thank you, Stephen. Very good. Moving on to 3B then. Page 3.
That's me again, Chair. I'll briefly take members through this. So this is a progress report for the work that we've done since the last report we brought to committee. So essentially it's covering the period 1st of October to the 28th of February. So almost as up to date as we can get. Just draw really members' attention first of all to the table at 5.5 on page 4 of your agenda, and that just sets out the assurance levels for the work that we've done. It's quite pleasing to be able to say that the majority of the audits that we've done we've been able to give substantial assurance to, and only two of them we've given partial assurance and no limited assurance in the period, which is quite pleasing. There's a bit more detail on that in Appendix 1 over on page 7, and that gives you a progress report for the quarter at the bottom of the page, just repeating some of that information in the covering report, but more so at the top of the page, giving you the whole year-to-date number of audits we've done and assurances that we've given, just to give you that full year picture up to the end of February. So overall, we are doing quite well. Majority of audits are substantial, although there is a reasonable number of partial and no limited assurances in the year to date. So we are on the right track. We haven't got too many things that are lower assurance. Over the page on page 8, Appendix 2 just sets out more detail of those audits we've issued in the quarter and the opinions we've given. So the first few are the partial ones with some narrative around there. So that's the commercial activity in the operations service and the IT starters and leavers process.
I thought that was on the external audit report about starters and leavers. I couldn't remember. I thought it had been sorted out. It has been brought up before.
Because in actual fact, we as councillors at one time did get a report on leavers.
Yeah.
And we were also given more or less reasons for their leaving, and that just seems to have vanished. It's no longer in the digest, it's no longer available. And I, for one, find it is quite amazing that you discover that you go to see an officer and they're not there any longer, you know, because they've gone. And you don't quite know why they've gone. And I think it's something that's quite remiss nowadays.
I've seen some digests where we do have that information. It's not in every digest, I don't think, but there are particular digests where we have arrivals and departures. That's in.
It's a security issue as well about checking whether ex-employees, I think, at the bottom have still got access. I mean, with all the sort of talk of cyber attacks and everything now in the current international situation, this is a bit going to be
I do remember when one of my colleagues didn't get voted in at one election, but was still making a nuisance of himself in the planning department for about 6 months afterwards. He's now chairman of Moorlands.
So if I may, Chair, in terms of this audit was specifically focused on our IT starter and leavers, so it's how we set people up on IT and how we take them off IT. But as you say, some of those points about checking that we've had equipment back, checking things there, and the outcome of this audit that they are going to be working towards is tightening up those links between sort of HR notifications of people leaving and making sure we get that linked up, but also at the front end making sure that we get
new starters, we make sure they've done their data protection training and certain other IT security training as early as possible, because I can remember when I started, you had to do it within the first day, or pretty much you had to sign, you'd read some of these things within the first day. Now there isn't, at the moment there isn't that emphasis, so we're trying to get that back. So, sorry Chair.
Sorry. Yeah.
Right, okay. Hey James, I think the comments and the key issues there are quite alarming. You know, what's happening in the operations department that we've got all these concerns, you know, the fact that work is needed to on the method to calculate quotes and costs of jobs and all these sorts of things.
Jen, if I could respond to that one.
Yeah.
This is kind of a legacy from previous management of the service area, where they kind of branched out into doing work outside of the council, whether they take on jobs for other areas. And perhaps there isn't always the detail there about how they've costed that. I think what they've always looked to do is cover their direct costs, but they've not necessarily always recovered their overheads. It's something we've looked at a couple of times, and so now we've kind of taken a step back and looking at actually, will we continue with that sort of work? And will we just actually go back to the core work of the council? That's, I think, the direction that the head of service is intending to take on that one.
And I think, just to add to that, if I may, Chair, I think the original intention when it was set up is this commercial activity sort of branch of the service would be self-sufficient, it would be independent of the day-to-day grounds maintenance and other areas that they do. And I think over time the boundaries have been blurred again, so that team are delivering some of the standard grounds maintenance work as well as the commercial works, and there isn't that clarity over the clear split.
That give us a risk we're not fully recovering overhead?
I think that's the concern in terms of the overheads. They're covering the direct costs, so in their eyes, they're making a profit, but actually there's that question about whether they're sufficient, making a sufficient contribution to the overhead.
Yeah.
But as I say, I think the way that the new head of service is looking at this is, actually, that's not core business. Do we have the capacity actually to do that? So I think that's where they're at the moment, is looking at the whole of the structure of the service and what really is important going forward. And I think we'll see a lot less of that.
Okay, yes. And I think, if I may, Chair, one of the reasons this is on the plan is because of our discussions with the heads of service as we're going through. And this was one area they were flagged up, that they would welcome an audit to give them more information about what was happening in the area. So actually there's a positive in there that we have found this information, and it came from the head of service just having some concerns about, is it so it's one of the bonuses of the way we're working at the moment, that we can drop some of these things into the
right.
Thank you, Chairman. Am I right in thinking that the audit committee could ask for the head of service to come and explain the situation?
We could do if the committee thinks it's necessary.
Sorry?
We could do if the committee thinks it's necessary.
But if there is that in your...
Would we like to ask the head of service to come and tell us how he's getting on with implementing it?
You could, Chair. Normally we wouldn't advise the committee until maybe we've done a couple of follow-ups and they perhaps haven't, if they haven't progressed it.
Yeah.
But if the committee is minded to, I'm sure that the head of operations would be more than happy to come and explain kind of his take on what his intentions are.
I would say not, principally based on the response that Judith's given, because if we're looking, if the current direction of travel is to wind down the activity anyway, I don't think that to me is an answer to all of the points in there. That's quite swift and clear.
Well, in some ways I agree with you, but in other ways it does smack a bit of, it's a bit difficult, let's stop doing it. Rather than saying, well, perhaps it's still a service to a community. Like, I think one of the activities may be doing hanging baskets for, I remember, somebody external that we were doing. And perhaps that was one of the ones where we weren't fully including the overheads. So,
I wouldn't want the committee to think that they're stopping doing it because they think that's the easy option. It certainly would resolve things in a different way, but I think there is just this refocusing. Is this really what the Borough of Council's team are there
well,
for?
Well, perhaps before we go that far, perhaps we could ask the Cabinet Member for resources to actually investigate and give us a steer whether he thinks that the operations manager ought to come and talk to us. Perhaps you could tell us at the next meeting whether you've come to an opinion or not, Ralph. That'd be great. It would save us sort of dragging somebody in to give us a presentation when in reality it's not worth doing. And we're wasting his time. Angela.
Chair, just as a comment I'd like to make, I think at one point we did have a manager within that department who had a lot of stuff up his head. Mm. And it wasn't necessarily written down, and that manager was the one who knew what was being done and when it was being done, and there wasn't necessarily a record kept. And I think that this has possibly now come to light that we need to have it written down and not just on somebody's head to rely on.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that we shouldn't necessarily be getting over concerned about this because there is, I think, going back, maybe just I remember, you know, going back a number of years ago, not just the past couple of years, but as I say, there was a...
Well, it does happen. It does happen.
So, I think, it's when you read comments like that, that, you know, raises your concerns, you know, as to if the department is being run efficiently and whether, in fact, the council are losing money as a result of inefficiency and records not being kept. Mm.
Well,
that
should now come to light,
obviously. Yeah,
sorry. I'm saying
I think
that should now come to light now that records are being kept.
Yeah. So, if perhaps the committee could ask you, Ralph, to give us an update for the next meeting.
But one of the things also, Chair, is this fact that there are no periodic checks on the equipment held by employees.
Yes.
You know, that's, you know, really
I'd noted that one on the way through.
Yeah. How do you know the equipment is not stolen? How do you know that maybe employer are using other people to do their job?
I think actually it's a good thing that through you, Chair, that this has been highlighted to us. And I think as we are being told in tonight's agenda, the audit department do follow up all these things. And I think that we will in actual fact be getting a report back from the manager there telling us what progress has been made, because there's no point in him doing all these checks and balances, etc., and then not following them up whenever he's making recommendations. And I think in actual fact the question has been asked before, you know, what's happening about this? And we are told it's not a case of us just being told this is the situation. We do get told, yes, and there is a follow-up to find out what has been done about that statement. And I think it's actually good that we do have a manager who is drawing our attention to this, and we can then keep an eye on it and make a note ourselves that we may want to know what happened after that. You know, did that head of service take that on board? And I think when we should be really, really concerned is whenever there's not any action being taken. And I think also that the Cabinet Member being here present tonight, then surely the Cabinet Member will go back to his colleagues in Cabinet and say, look, this is the situation at this time. We need to keep an eye on that.
Judith.
This one actually falls within my service area. And I know since the new technology manager has been in place, she keeps a much more active eye on the findings from the audit. Yeah. And it's much more keen to progress these. Some of those are things that possibly we haven't quite picked up on. Some are not entirely within our gift. It's all the service areas as well. That one about leaders forms onto is completed where people change roles within the organisation. That's probably the tricky one for us to pick up and make sure that access is the same. So,
a thought occurs to me, Judith, that are we on risk then, because the authority is the data holder, and some of this equipment that has been used, particularly laptops and the like, could well be holding sensitive data that we're not quite sure where it's gone to, or who's got what.
The risk on that would be managed because all of our laptops are secured, so people can't just pick up and get into one of our laptops. And arguably, most of that data should not be held directly on the laptop. Everything is backed up either onto the cloud or onto our other kind of service infrastructure. So we do discourage people from holding things directly onto their laptops. So there shouldn't really be any of the sensitive data that you're thinking around in terms of like council tax or user benefits tax systems. People would be logging into a system with data pound somewhere else. It's not held on the laptop. So I'm not saying there isn't a risk at all. You can never say that when technology is involved, but it is managed down to as low level as we can.
Yeah. And if I may, Chair, there were ways, particularly with things like mobile phones, that if they're still on but lost or stolen, we can remotely wipe them so that any data on there goes. And I think there is some ability on the laptops again, but they are all encrypted before you get in, and then there's passwords and other things. So
the thing that was sort of tickling away at the back of my mind was that members are downloading reports that have got pink pages in them to read on the laptop, and whether they're left there or the member has been good enough to delete them all, which I can't remember that I've ever deleted any, so mine could well be in that state.
I think most of it, because of the BitLocker, the code you have to put in to actually
start it,
and the passwords and other things should make it, even if it's lost,
two levels of security there,
aren't
there?
To get to, but there is always a risk, and there's always people out there who can get into these things.
I will pick that point up though with the technology manager. One, look at perhaps issuing some guidance to members about doing that, but I can also build it in so that if you go into the IT team for another query, I can get them to do a proactive check, and if you've got sort of old documents lurking on there that don't need to be, we could clear them off there and then as well. So I'll talk to manager about having that.
Can I ask you, is it not the case that whenever you have sensitive material there, you can't print it off, it won't print? I think that's the situation, because I think that I know for a fact that I have had sensitive information. I might not have been the Borough Council, but when I have tried to print, it wouldn't go, it would not print. And that was whenever I had sensitive information. I think it might have been the Borough Council. I know that there's a situation where I couldn't print stuff off if it was on a pike. But as I say, maybe it wasn't Borough Council, but it was an organisation that I was with.
I've had an experience where somebody from another organisation shared a document with me, and they locked it down so only I could see it, and it did have some restrictions around printing it.
Yes.
I'm not sure that we use that in that way, but again, that's something I can have a look at. The only thing is that might then impede members who do need to print it. You know, you'll then need to have a balance on some of that.
Yeah.
And you can't forward it either.
Yeah.
You can't forward it either.
Yes.
Yes, Rob. If you have a code at any particular time which you have to use in order to get into the paperwork, in a few months' time that code changes.
Yes.
But if you then need to get back to the previous information, because you need it for comparison purposes or whatever, it's very difficult to do that unless each one keeps a record of the code and when it started and when it ended. Now, I don't think I'm not sure the Borough Council has a record of that, so it may be after, say, a year.
I'm sure the IT department have got a record of it because they sent them out, don't they?
I'm not absolutely sure they have. And I'd be interested to hear whether they do have or not, and if so, how do we access that? Because there have been occasions when I've wanted to access something about a year ago, and it's too late, that the code has been changed, you can't get into that code anymore.
They don't want to tell you, though.
Well,
Chair,
the IT team wouldn't, because they're not the ones who are putting those passwords on, but Democratic Services would, certainly for any
Of
course I have.
Probably only back a few years.
If you're happy, Chair, I'll carry on with
Please do.
So, I mean, those are the two that we spoke about where we've given partial assurances. The others are substantial. The next table in there is just giving you information about the audits we've started but not yet completed, so you should see those coming through. Mm-hmm. Probably the next big thing to pick up is on page 12, Appendix 4, which is the follow-ups we've completed in the period. Mm-hmm. And probably key are the first three of those to a certain degree to pick up on. A couple of good news stories, that the first two we've moved from limited to partial assurance, so they, whilst they still aren't great, they are moving in the right direction, and we are working towards those, and particularly the payroll one. Some of that is just timing, because some of the tasks they only do once a year, some of it is updating procedure notes, and they've had some capacity issues in the team, so actually we understand some of the reasons within that. The next really good news is pest and dog control, that's moved it from limited to substantial at first follow-up, so they've made a huge leap forward in that. And then we've got the next few, which were partial assurance and are still partial assurance, but actually are only there because they've got one, the first few, they've only got one thing outstanding still, and they've made progress in others. The street scene, which we've done a third follow-up on, is still partial, and they've still got five things in progress, but a lot of that is very close to getting done as well, so whilst it's been a long time, they are still working in the right direction. I mean, I'll try and give you as much assurance as I can that we hope that will get done, and if we do another follow-up, it will be complete, but I can't give you total guarantees in terms of that. But broadly, that's the rest of it. And then finally, Appendix 5 is the areas that we had got identified for work for this year but we haven't started, and in reality, we're probably unlikely to start most of those. For a lot of them, we will just roll them forward and pick them up in the new year's work and try and get those pulled off throughout the year. There's a few areas like the local plan. It was in there because we were looking to be at a certain point in Stafford's local plan. Actually, the decision now to abandon what we've done and start again means it's not worthwhile for us to audit it at that point in time. So that will probably sit in abeyance for a little bit, and we'll pick it up again when we reach a new area. That's all I really want to say on those, but I'm happy to take any further questions if there are anything.
We
will look to try and get that done again in consultation with the head of service and service manager. It's just at the moment, with the work that we've got on, we haven't been able to start that in quarter three or quarter four as we'd originally planned.
But
we are looking to try and get that done.
I thought there were a review for planning enforcement.
There are some separate changes going on directly in service, so in some ways the delay by audit and review it was probably helpful, because it will allow the planning enforcement team to move forward with their things, and we can comment on a more up-to-date position.
Yeah, but it's really skewed here. You know, I'm in the rural ward and it's horrible what happened. Plenty of legacy enforcement issues, because, you know, there is a deadline for enforcement. So if something is built, maybe after 4 years, it's legal. Mm-hmm. So we need a good audit.
Mm-hmm. The two that just had its own separate review, and there's an action plan coming out of that as well. So okay, we'll be able to check progress on all of that in due course.
I have noticed we do seem to have got a number of new enforcement officers coming onto the strength. So hopefully it will improve.
Back to page 13, street scene. Another problem again with operations. So I just hope that the cabinet member will be able to report back on these various concerns to do with operations, and including street sealing.
These are also connected with some of the legacy issues from how it's been operated in the past. And it's a big service area to work through and start to make those changes.
And I think just from information I've got from other sources as well, because some of these follow-ups, as with the audits, could have been done in October onwards, so we are several months down. But in terms of that street scene, I know, particularly for the procurement of new vehicles, where it says that funds have been agreed, but work on procuring new vehicles is still outstanding. As far as I'm aware, I think those vehicles are either here or they have been purchased and they're being racked out and kitted out ready for us to start work. So they have done that procurement and we're just waiting to just get them back ready to use. So that's one of the actions that is already ticked off. One of the other actions you can see there all linked back to the audit that we've got about reviewing commercial activities. So that ties in. So almost two out of those five outstanding are either in progress or complete. Mm-hmm. And some of the elements for external works, again, that's linked to the commercial activities. Yes, yes. So again, that's another one that's sort of mindful. So whilst it looks bad that we've got five out there, actually probably the ones that, to my knowledge, I'm not sure where we're at, whether they have moved since the follow-up, is about the shore bed maintenance and litter bin routes being remapped. But again, sometimes they are big pieces of work to do to work out what's the best way of doing it and the time and the need for overtime and just managing that down as much as possible. So there's perhaps two out there that I can't update on, but most of the others are either linked to that commercial operations, commercial activities audit, or with the vehicles they have been purchased.
Okay, thank you.
So one for next time, we've got to be able to give you a decent grilling on that one then.
Or the head of service, if that is the way that you choose to go.
I think perhaps we can ask that if it's anything like five outstanding, we will need to see the head of service, please. But we will leave that to your discretion. Yeah.
I wanted to bring up about payroll, the levels of access, it was saying, to payroll. That's quite sensitive. And also it says the reconciliation document. Is that reconciling the number on payroll to the number in HR? Or
it's reconciling different elements of the payroll. So again, it's something that is a work in progress, that is part of my team. And again, we're picking up some legacy issues to kind of improve the standards on that. The audit had identified for us that that some changes have been made to the access levels and it had compromised something else that the team weren't aware of. So we're working to fix that, but we've had to go to the software supplier, and one of our team needs some training to fully implement that. That is all planned in, and we are actively working. We take some action immediately, which is helped to reduce the risk. But so we just kind of fully take it off until we've done the next step. So. But there are checks every month when the payroll goes through. There are checks that we do. So I say we just want to improve on that and be able to document in a better way.
So that's perhaps one for you as well, then, Judy.
So that is one of the things that happened from a limited to a party, but you actually want to get it to a substantial.
Mm. Those are the two with big outstanding in progress items, isn't it? So it would be nice to perhaps have a special mention for those two at the next meeting. Anything else as we run through? That takes us past Appendix 5 there onto the internal audit plan.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This is me again. So this is the internal audit plan for 25-26. It's setting out broadly the work that we're looking to carry out as internal audit in the year to feed into that annual conclusion at the end of the year that will be in the annual report and will hopefully inform the committee's decision making on the annual governance statement as well. So it all builds up to those key governance documents. Probably a few areas I'd just like to pull out on this. Really, paragraphs 5.3 onwards on page 17 and the table at 5.5. Pleasing to be able to report that we are fully staffed. I think as we updated members throughout the year last year, we did recruit the two vacant posts that we got. Those staff are settling in. As with all new staff, it takes them a little bit of time to get up to speed and things like that. So we have been impacted a little bit on this year, but I'm hoping through the course of 25-26 we will see them fully at speed and delivering everything as we expect those posts to do. We've done an assessment which is in more detail at Appendix 1 of the resources within the team. It's actually seen a slight increase in days because of those in-house staff. We can actually get more work from an in-house person than we can from an external contractor that we have been using to buy in. The table at 5.5 shows how we are splitting those actual days we've got for audit work across the councils. So we've got 350 days across both councils, 75 days on Stafford specific audits and 90 days on Canuck specific audits and 60 days on the IT audit plan. The reason for the disparity between the Stafford only audits and the Canuck only audits is primarily down to the fact that Canuck still has the housing stock, and that's a whole department extra where we do audit work. So there will be a number of audits that we do on Canuck's housing that just don't apply to Stafford, and that's why we do have that slight disparity. It's not that we're trying to shortchange Stafford or anything like that, it is just on those service areas. In terms of the rest of the report, as I say, we are looking at continuing with the audit methodology we introduced last year. So rather than having a fixed plan agreed now for the next 12 months, we are looking at using this almost quarterly review of a list of high priority, high risk areas that we would like to cover. And at 5.8, we do set out some themes that we're particularly looking to pick up in the audit plan this year. So that is local government reorganisation and transformation work that the council has on. We want to make sure that we're still focusing on the delivery of the improvement plans that came out of the VFM report and other improvement works that have been added in since for some of those areas. Some work around any additional requirements that the external auditors do have, although from the conversation we just had, there is rarely anything that they do want us to look at particularly, and the focus on the delivery of high profile projects. We've also, at the bottom of that page, introduced a theme of compliance that we want to be looking at on the audits this year. That can be high level compliance around, are we making sure that all of our buildings, whether it's the operational buildings or the buildings that we lease out, are compliant in terms of health and safety, repairs, maintenance, gas safety, that type of thing, down to other things that we may look at about compliance with the council's code of conduct, compliance with other areas like that, member officer codes and that type of thing. So we do feel that that's important to make sure that we have the good governance around those sorts of compliance issues, and also the good compliance, particularly when it comes to things like health and safety, to make sure that we don't get pulled up on anything like that. In terms of the work set out, I am comfortable that we will have covered sufficient work by the end of the year to give that annual conclusion required by the standards. And I hope members are comfortable with the approach that we're taking. I think one of the big advantages of doing this quarterly review is that we want to align it more with the risk management process, where we are bringing in quarterly updates of the risk registers, particularly the strategic corporate risk registers that come to this committee and cabinet, so that if there's a change in a risk on the risk register, we can build that change into the audit plan and consider if we need to add some additional work in. So I'm seeing the two things side by side. I think, as I've mentioned to the chair earlier, that new risk management process is being launched for officers from the 1st of April, so we're going to do a new risk register for there, and we will probably for the June committee, where you get to see that risk register, deliver some training to you to outline more what that risk management process is and how it will impact you and what you should be looking at, both on those risk registers, but also we're trying to make sure that you're aware of what you should see on committee reports as well, where we've got the risk implications section to make sure that they are set out sufficiently enough to give you informed decision making. So it will be a bit of a two-way split on that. But as I say, key thing for me on the audit plan, it will link in with the two. The final appendix, Appendix 2, is the list of audits we've identified so far from that initial tour, from rolling over things that we know we're not going to deliver this year. And it's set out broadly by the council's objectives. We don't use quite the same words as you do in the corporate plan, business plan for the council, and that's just because we're trying to keep the wording the same across both councils, and each one uses slightly different words. But broadly, the corporate plan is set out about the economy, about the council, about the community and the environment and those things. So those are the headings we've used on here. But I'm quite happy to take any questions on the report or the contents of the plan.
I was going to ask about the, was it external support, that 60 days on the IT audit. You've taken on new staff and why you still needed external support?
Okay, that, if I may, Chair, is specifically for technical IT audits that we just don't have the skills and capacity to deliver in-house. So they are the types of audits where you need to be speaking the same language as IT to make sure you understand it. So whilst there are some areas in IT that my team can do, because they are more straightforward, more the systems that we're used to, if it starts going into things like network security, cyber security, we just don't have the skills and the knowledge to do that. And For the amount of work we can actually do 60 days a year, we don't have enough work to take on our own specialist IT auditor, and particularly we don't have the funds to take on a permanent IT auditor. They'd probably be demanding far higher than I'm paid for the IT audit work that they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's quite an expensive commodity, which is why we try and target it to where it's needed, and I say where we can. They will always tell us, oh, we need to do your data protection, if we need to do this, we need to do that, but actually we don't need the IT skills to do that. We need them to be saying, right, have we got our network security set right, have we got our backup set right, have we got our IT disaster recovery arrangements right, where you need to know things like cloud computing, is all that set up right and secure. If you haven't got that technical background, that technical knowledge and know what they're talking about, it will just go all over your head and
set of interesting questions you've just asked there.
Yeah. and that's why we pay them. And some of the reports that we have seen, you've got a couple that I've just been talking to. Website security is one. Our backs processing is another that we will be coming through on the next quarterly report. I've just had conversations with the IT auditor over the work that they've just concluded on those. Mm. So it is about those big things where you need that technical knowledge.
And just before we go over to the point that's outstanding, you did mention disaster recovery. I've not heard that mentioned recently. Have we audited the disaster recovery plan recently?
I think we have in recent years. It's not something we would necessarily do every year in terms of IT disaster recovery.
Well, I was just thinking general disaster recovery.
In terms of general disaster recovery, there's been some work. We did our civil contingencies work a few years ago, and actually, as a case in point, one of my auditors has had a meeting this morning with the manager responsible for civil contingencies now, and the officer we have from the CCU, to start an audit of civil contingencies, which will pick up our emergency planning and business continuity arrangements at the highest level. So it's quite a timely question that we have actually just started a piece of work on.
We're not going to close down like Heathrow then.
Hopefully not.
Sorry,
had a now that the council have agreed to look at buying the civic offices, Will that be included in the high-profile major projects?
I suppose it will depend on how much of a project that is. It will certainly potentially feature in some of the areas in terms of asset management and things like that. But actually, in terms of the actual asset management, making sure this is safe, and that's always been a council responsibility under the lease. The actual just purchase and bringing it onto our books is probably not that big a project. It was more. It's probably more of a financial review, and probably something that external auditors will perhaps have a view on, and they will want to have a look at because of how are we funding that?
Yeah.
Is it the right? Was it the right decision financially in terms of where we're at? Yeah. In terms of internal audit, I'm not sure we could add a massive amount to that process. Mm-hmm. And in terms of a project, it's only a conveyance of buying a property. We will go through some legal steps, the same as if we were to buy a shop unit or to buy. I mean, we've just bought a shopping centre in town as part of a wider project. The actual purchase element and the conveyance element of that is a minor part of the project.
Yeah, so it could be an external.
I would have thought external audit will take an interest in that because of the potential financial cost and the financing of it. That's more their sort of remit than internal audit.
Yeah, I would imagine they'll pick it up as part of the audit of the accounting in due course.
Thank you, Jim. Can I just say that as one who has complained possibly for years about the shortage of staff in the audit department, I'd like to say how pleased I am that we now have these new members of staff, and I'd like to congratulate the manager for working so hard and not ignoring you for I'm really pleased about that.
If I may, Chair, I'm glad that you're pleased. You're probably not as pleased as I am. I think it's 7 or 8 years since we last had a full team, and it's not the want of trying to get all of those positions filled, and I think we were just lucky when we went out the last time to have the right candidates interested and people there that were willing to apply for the jobs and take it on, which sometimes we've gone out to advert and had no interest at all. So I say I'm probably as pleased as you.
Your perseverance is commendable.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Just kind of putting together the previous item, and particularly that list of the provisional audit work not yet started, and I can see where some of these have rolled forward and some of them have not. Does that mean that, for example, the work on tree preservation orders is likely to be done this year, or does it appear somewhere that I can't see in the plan?
It may just be that when I was pulling that list together of the areas, there were certain things that I knew definitely wouldn't be started, and there's others that may be started. And the tree preservation orders, we've done part of the work in terms of we've done what can occur. We haven't started the Stafford element, which is why it's still on your list here. So we will be doing that. And as I say, some of those things, or majority of the things on there, other than things like the local plan, probably won't roll forward this year. If they've not been started, they will roll forward into the list. So what you should see is, when we bring the next progress report, this list will be rolled forward minus the things we've done or we've started, and things will get added. So certainly I will go back everything outstanding at the year and make sure that they are all added in. So I think it's just sometimes a bit of timing about writing the reports and getting them into this position, and a bit of crystal ball gazing to see what I think we might actually get started.
Okay. Any further items on there? So, on to value for money progress report then.
Thanks, Joe, because it's been a break.
Yeah.
So this is the progress update as at the end of December, in terms of the actions from the value for money audit. As you will see, 80% of the action plan have been completed in full or work is on target, so we're continuing to make steady progress there. We've had a little bit of slippage, and if I just talk you through those items that have slipped, because they actually all fall within a couple of pages. Just trying to start those. So they start on page 33. The first one of those where it has slipped is the
the recommencement of the budget monitoring report. You'll see in there that an element of that was completed as part of the budget process, so we've got the period six. I know that the Section 151 is keen to report that separately, and at the moment he's got his deputy working on the period nine monitoring. So work is in hand on getting us back to quarterly performance, financial performance report on that. We just didn't think we'd done enough to be able to move that to a kind of a tick. So hopefully by the end of the year we will start to see that one move forward. The next one where we've got some issues around the IT security policy, and this one I have to say that the technology manager has done all the work and it's sat with me. It's one that's pinged backwards and forwards between us a little bit, and I've been then sidelined looking at local government reorganisation for the last month or more. So that's something I will pick up and clear that one and move it forward. And then the other one is another one that's kind of been impacted by local government reorganisation, and that's the review of hybrid working. So we've got a draft report, I've discussed that with the HR manager, we were just fine-tuning it, but now we just want to revisit that, because I think, again, local government reorganisation is putting a slightly different context on certain things, so we just want to check that before we push that one through to leadership too. The one action there that's got the red cross against it, which indicates it's slipped by more than 3 months, is the lessons learned exercise of the implementation of the finance system. And I did have a discussion with the Section 151 officer about actually is it worth us still proceeding with that given the amount of time that's elapsed. We both agreed that it was, but that we would push that one back into quarter one, and we need to get the end of year closed down underway before we can pick that one up. So we're saying there is still an intention to do it, it's just taking us a little bit longer to get there. So I say that takes you through kind of all the slippage, and I will be very shortly starting work on the quarter four position and bringing that to the committee in due course.
Is that why quarter four is in a different colour?
Yes, it's all shaded out just to indicate that those aren't due yet.
Yeah.
What I will say as well, as I go through that, I'm going to then review everything that's due after quarter four into sort of 25-26. And we're going to take a view about which of those actions we're going to continue with and which ones we may take a conscious decision not to do because we won't see the benefit because the council won't exist in 3 years' time. And that's a conversation we'll have with the external auditors as well because we've started a dialogue about this being a longer term piece of work. And I say there'll be a few on that. I don't think there'll be many, but I think there will be a few on there that will perhaps take a slightly different view.
There's an awful lot of them shared with us.
I'm a bit confused because when you say quarter four, 24-25,
yes.
It's ending 31st of March?
Yes.
Next Monday?
Yes.
So, you haven't started?
No, I'm not saying we haven't started. We don't have the progress update because this report was written probably a couple of months ago.
It's much better.
Yes. It typically takes us a whole quarter to get through. So we get to the quarter end, officers start to prepare the information, it comes to me to collate it, then it has to go through the cabinet cycle and everything else, and it takes us from the best part of 3 months to get to the actual committee. So now I've just updated the progress report. Sorry.
It is quite risky that we're going to be a long way behind on things because of that time in excuse me, sticky cough.
We've only got some minor slippage at the moment. There's nothing I'm ringing alarm bells for the committee. I say, yes, we've got one that's slipped by more than 3 months, but actually that's probably one of the lower risk items that's sat in the action plan.
Right.
I mean, already, if I were to turn to quarter four, one of the first action in there is about the draft accounts for 23-24 to be published. They have now been completed.
Yeah.
So you will see some of those actually being shown as completed. There are a few that I can say now that they haven't progressed, but I'd say there'll be a mixed picture in that one. And so that's where we need to take stock and think about what do we want to do going forward.
Yeah. Okay. Look forward to interesting hearing all of that. Any other points?
Yeah. I just wanted to ask on the page 32 about the review of the project management arrangements for the arrangements for the town centre. It said board meetings, steering groups, and weekly project team meetings have been re-established, which is good news, but I'm a bit worried the fact they've stopped, you know, needed re-establishment for such a big project. I just wanted to make sure that things are being kept on top of.
I think they've just become a little bit ad hoc, and they've lost a little bit of structure and momentum. I think there was such a lot going on, that they've just lost that rhythm, and I think they have now re-established that rhythm and signed to reporting on that.
Who does that all report through, Judith?
In terms of the major town centre projects?
The board meetings, steering groups and weekly project team meetings.
I think that comes to this planning, what's it called?
Development.
There are updates that are given to the
economic
scrutiny committee. But in terms of the board meetings, there is a town centre board, and there are external partners on there, I think the county council, and there are various partners on that. So there's a formally constituted board that oversees everything. I think then the steering groups and the weekly project team meetings are kind of more officer led. I mean, certainly I know the chief executive meets weekly, it's either weekly or fortnightly, with the deputy chief exec for place and with the head of economic development, prosperity, the cycle. But there are copious amounts of meetings that are taking place to keep an eye on progress on those.
Right, does that come through Ralph's area?
I think
it's planned.
Yeah. Is this a cabinet member for? Well, some of it's Councillor Kenny, isn't it?
Councillor.
I think, if I may, Chair, in terms of the board meetings, I think the leader sits on the board with the leader from the County Council and the Chief Exec and others. So I'm assuming some of those things feed into Cabinet as well in terms of the leader updating from the board. I'm not sure if the minutes actually get formally go anywhere, but I know certainly the leader is a member of that project board, and there are other sort of reporting routine, as you say, to scrutiny and to other cabinet members.
Yeah. We just don't seem to hear very much about them. And given the size of them, it's slightly concerning.
There will be quarterly progress updates go through by the scrutiny papers, because it's one of the key projects in the corporate plan.
Yeah.
So that it will be set out within the priority delivery plans, and there will be quarterly updates contained within that report that goes to Cabinet and also goes to the relevant scrutiny committee. They'll only be quite high level, but there are updates in there.
Yeah.
I think the office has given more detailed update at the meeting.
How do they impact on our accounts?
I need the section 151 officer to explain all the technicalities of that. A lot of them, I won't say all of it, but there's a good chunk of the money is the Future High Streets Fund and the funds that we've got, so we're required to account to those directly through government returns as well.
Right.
So a lot of the technical element sits through the government returns. I think we have to do quarterly returns on those. So I say there is a lot of accounting for how that money is spent. Yeah. But I think a lot of that sits more in kind of comes into our accounts and goes back out again because of the way we've had the funding.
Yeah.
It will come in as grant funding, which we'll have to account for in the accounts, but then the spending against it as well. So there's almost two elements. There's the project reporting for the funder, and then it will be in our accounts and quite probably a few technical entries because of increases in assets, because obviously we've purchased some assets, we're then pulling some of them down, so it's sort of there will be buildings coming in and then going out again.
Smoke and mirrors through our accounts then.
And the bulk of that money is capital money as well.
Yeah.
So the capital schemes that are reported.
Just a little bit concerned that we don't see it flushing through the accounts.
And it was probably because of the nature of them being capital.
Yeah. Oh. Well, they are until there's underspends and overspends. Then they're our responsibility, aren't they?
as I say, you probably need a section 151 off the tip, but that's not my area of expertise. So it will be tied up with the terms of the grant as to what happens. So if there were to be an underspender, then due to have to fund those other funds, it would be returned to the
perhaps board. We could ask the section 151 officer to let the committee know where these projects actually are visible, because it doesn't seem totally clear to me where the members have any visibility of them.
Chair, that in its fully sense isn't the responsibility of the section 151 for the financial element, yes, but actually the delivery, the progress would lie with the Deputy Chief Executive in place. He's the one responsible for delivering.
So that's two of them then. It would be reassuring to know where they appeared in our accounts, so we could have a view on any influence they might have on our accounts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could we have this on the agenda for the next meeting?
Well, do you need to be slightly careful that some of this is thrown into the territory of scrutiny rather than the audit committee?
Yeah.
It would only appear for this committee as part of the annual statement of accounts, so I wouldn't expect you to be getting an update. In terms of revenue, spend, capital, that goes through scrutiny, so it's the relevant scrutiny committee that's
I think we need to be sure about what we actually want, the 151 or such a
company. Well, I think the question was, Angela, where will they appear in our accounts? Because that's our responsibility. And to have a reassurance of this is where they're looked at, this is where they're controlled, and this is where they'll appear in the accounts would be reassuring for
I
us.
I will happily take that back to the section 151 officer, and I'm sure we'll be happy to provide the committee with an update at the next meeting.
Any other issues going through, as it's getting quite close to 8 o'clock now? I was thinking of a supper, actually. Whether the dog's got it yet. Any other issues going through?
No.
Thank you very much for that, Judith. That's did look quite a short report, that. It's taken us a while to get through. No other questions? I think we're done then, Jim.
Thank you, Chairman.